Good day, and welcome to the Kontoor Global 2017 preliminary results call. Today's conference is being recorded and will be presented by Josef Brandt, President and CEO, Carol Schnatz, Executive Vice President and COO, and Jean-Christophe Chevalier, Executive Vice President and CFO. At this time, I would like to hand the conference over to you, Josef Brandt. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thanks everyone for joining us today, and let's get started reviewing the year 2017. As you've seen from the materials that we've posted overnight, it's been a good year, 2017. We're posting and announcing on a preliminary results basis, a very high quality year and a strong set of results, both operationally and financially. We'll start off the presentation with slide four and walk through a general overview of the year, some updates on the growth aspects of the company's portfolio, turn to operations and then more in-depth review of finances. As you can see on slide four, where we are starting, we start out with a very strong operational performance for the year. Health and safety LTI rate, which is our primary lagging indicator of operational performance in the health and safety area, which we continue to believe is the most significant correlation with how good an operator you are, is at a record low for us, 0.03 LTI rate. We go into more detail as to the meaning of that ratio and the performance that we had in the year in my CEO letter that is in the RNS statement as well as the annual report that will be posted on the website shortly. We had good availability, as you'll hear from Carol, in our thermal and renewable fleets overall, and this led to the financial results that you see for 2017, which we would note is slightly above the midpoint of the consensus for the year. We topped the 1 billion revenue mark for the first time in the company's history, a meaningful increase in revenue coming on the back of some additions to the portfolio, as well as the first full year of operations for assets that had come out of the construction phase in the partial year 2016. Adjusted EBITDA, which is our prime financial metric, was up to 513 million, with FFO, funds from operation, at 256, and a very strong conversion ratio, as you'll hear more about when Jean-Christophe presents. Liquidity at the parent level, both from distributions from our operating businesses, as well as obviously primary proceeds in the IPO of a little short of 400 million, which puts us where we said we would be on net leverage at 4.1x at the end of the year. As we turn to slide five, and most of this, with the exception of the financial results that we've just released, you already know, and perhaps it's not too surprising given that the IPO and its marketing was just several months ago, but it's still good to note for the company and certainly for the management team that we're delivering on those targets that we set for ourselves and our shareholders at the beginning of the IPO process. So we've come in where we expected and the market expected on EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA within the guidance range. As I just mentioned, our net leverage ratio is where we said it would be at the lower end of the range. We announced the stub period dividend, which was indicated during the IPO of 17.5 million, which is where we signaled it would be last year. You'll also note that we have narrowed the range for the expected dividend that will be announced for 2018. The range was previously 70 million-80 million. We've narrowed the range to between 75 million and 80 million on the back of more visibility on the M&A side of the business and also some capital transactions that we expect to happen during the year. In terms of growth, which is clearly the critical component of the story at IPO, where we said to the market that we expected to double EBITDA over 5 years with no new issuance of shares, I would note that we are clearly ahead of where we expected to be, as we note in the RNS statement, on the basis of both the acquisition that we announced in Spain as well as visibility on some of the repowering transactions that we had discussed with the market previously, and then the development of our own pipeline. We're confident that both of these aspects of the growth strategy, greenfield and acquisition, is moving forward, bringing forward the target of doubling adjusted EBITDA per share. The Kosovo transaction reached commercial close in December of 17. This is the major milestone, which saw the signature, the execution of all the major project documents with the government, that happened just before the end of the year. We then have turned our attention in 2018 to managing the procurement and the financing for the assets so that we can reach financial close and start construction at the end of 2018, beginning of 2019. We've had several transactions that have occurred in the fourth quarter around our solar roll-up strategy in Italy. We've added 40 megawatts approximately to that portfolio through two acquisitions, one that closed in December, one that was signed late in December and is subsequently part of which is subsequently closed. And so we continue to like the approach to the market in those countries where we have meaningful operating presence and strong operations capability to do bolt-on acquisitions, what we call our roll-up strategy, and are pleased to see the success around that strategy at the end of 2017, and expect to see additional opportunities as we move into 2018. And then I won't spend too much time here, but we'll provide a little bit more detail on the acquisition of Acciona's CSP portfolio that we announced in February, a very significant acquisition that's on track to close next month. Briefly turning to slide six, this is a slide that you've seen if you followed us since November. It shows the doubling target. We obviously are well on our way to that doubling with the transaction announced with Acciona. We like where we sit regarding both the M&A pipeline and the greenfield development pipeline. We talk a little bit about this in the following slides. If you look at slide seven, you'll see the two acquisitions I just mentioned that we've made in the solar space, most of it in Italy. We closed the 20-megawatt acquisition of assets in early December, and then in late December we signed another transaction to acquire additional solar operating assets, most of which are in Italy. A few of the megawatts are in Romania. We've closed the Italian portion of the transaction just last month and have added then a meaningful amount of solar capacity to the portfolio. Currently, our European solar portfolio, not including the Acciona Solar Thermal, is approximately 100 megawatts, and as I mentioned earlier, we like the opportunities we see in the space to continue to acquire operations, restructure those operations, and improve the performance of these businesses, which is something that we've done consistently over the last 8 years of being active in the solar space in Italy. Turning to slide eight, I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the Austrian wind repowering. It's an important part of our footprint in Europe, and there have been some recent developments that bring forward some of the expectations that we had when we marketed the IPO back in November. The two assets that we call Velm-Götzendorf and Scharndorf that we anticipated receiving feed-in tariff and being able to begin the repowering process back during the IPO period have now received the feed-in tariff. We signed the feed-in tariff award this quarter, or just in the first quarter, and we've started the construction, beginning with the decommissioning of the existing tower and turbines on Velm-Götzendorf, and we'll start with Scharndorf imminently. So both plants now are underway with repowering. They both have their feed-in tariff. And then we expect as well to repower another four wind farms, which we provide details about on the slide, and expect those to have feed in tariff finalization towards the end of this year beginning, and then extending for some of the wind farms into late 2019. These are remarkable projects for a number of reasons. If you look at the type of pickup that we're getting in generation from existing footprint, so no new towers, we're effectively putting up new towers but not more towers, and we're adding new wind turbine technology, you really get a snapshot of the significant technological breakthroughs that have occurred in the wind industry, both in terms of tower technology and turbine technology in the last 13 years when these assets were initially constructed and began operations. You see pickups in Velm, Götzendorf, and Scharndorf of between 64 and 96% generation increase. And this is on the same footprint, the same number of towers, the same number of turbines, and obviously the same wind resource. And we're just capturing more of that because of the technological improvements that have occurred over the last decade. And it's a remarkable pickup in production, and certainly from the standpoint of a country that wants to increase its wind share but doesn't want to see new wind farms permitted in the country, it shows you how repowering can really add to the overall renewable production of a given market without having to add new permitted land or go through kind of contentious permitting processes in a country with the natural physical beauty of Austria. And so we're encouraged by the ability to obtain the feed-in tariff earlier than we expected and to start these repowerings and also what it means for the additional repowerings for the wind portfolio that we have in Austria today. Slide 9 is a reminder of the transaction that we announced just in February, so a little over 6 weeks ago. At the time, we noted that we expected this transaction to close in the second quarter. We're narrowing the timing for the close. We expect that to close next month. Mm-hmm. When we do close, we'll then and have more visibility as to the date of closing, we'll be able to start communicating what we expect in terms of overall expectations for the 2018 year for Contour as a whole and for these assets. To remind again, it's about 250 megawatts split between five operating assets, so 5 times 50. These are all located in Spain. We liked the acquisition price and the implied multiple here. We had provided guidance inside the prospectus about the EBITDA of the business. And when we look at the overall multiple, given the headline purchase price as well as the netting of the intercompany, you can see it's firmly below a 9x EBITDA, EV/EBITDA multiple. It's a business that operates under a regulated regime. So effectively, you have a capacity payment that's set with reference to Spanish Treasury yield and a spread above that yield. There's 18 years left. We have long-term financing attached to the asset, and we like the opportunity to add value on the operations side of the business. And so we've been present, as you know, in Spain since 2011. We have a good operating team there and have shown remarkable availabilities and fixed cost reduction in that thermal plant that we acquired back in 2011. And that team will be managing the business for us when we integrate it into our portfolio beginning next month. Turning to slide 10, just a quick summary again of Kosovo. Commercial close was the major milestone achieved in December of 17. We like the progress we're making early in the year 18 on the preparing for the tender and procurement of the construction services as well as the financing, which will be closely linked, obviously, given the role of institutions like Export Credit when it comes to constructing large infrastructure projects. There has been, since the announcement the commercial close, significant interest from major EPC consortia, the type of entities that you would expect to be interested in a project of this size, and we feel good about where we stand to reach the target of financial closing construction at the end of this year, beginning of next year. So that's an overview, a strong year 17. We like where we are vis-a-vis the expectations that we set for our new shareholders in the business for 2017, as well as the visibility it's giving us on 2018. And with that, I'm going to turn it over now to Carl to walk through the operating results of the year and provide some more granularity around asset performance. Carl?
Yeah, thank you, Joe. So as usual, when I'm talking about operations, I would like to start with our health and safety performance. We had an extraordinary, very good year in 2017 regarding our health and safety performance. End of 2016, which was also a good year, we said we are now ready for a new strategy, which is called Target Zero, Health and Safety Performance Target Zero. So that means zero LTI as a target. We almost achieved it. We only had one lost time incident. It was a car accident outside of the power plant, but which records. And so that means the whole year we only had one accident in the whole fleet. We are counting our people, contractors, and visitors. And that leads to a LTI rate, which is based on 200,000 working hours, of 0.03. So this is our lagging indicator, but we also have a lot of leading indicators, and these leading indicators become more and more important when you reach almost zero incidents. And when these leading indicators is inspections, health and safety trainings, hazard identification, and so on. And when we saw during the year that some of the power plants were behind the leading indicators, we started an intervention program and brought them back on track, and which at the end gave us the results as it is stated here. If we compare us with our peers in that industry, we can really say that we are not only in the top decile, but we are also leading the top decile regarding the health and safety performance. Now, coming to the operation performance of our power plants on page 13. So we continue to have high availability factors. So this is the most important KPI for power plant operators. The availability is the hours when a power plant is available for operations. And in 2017, our availability was 92.6, which is also in the top decile of our benchmark peers. It is a little bit less compared to 2016, but this was a combination of one we had in one power plant, an engine failure, and plant overhauls. So in 2017, we had more plant overhauls compared to the other years. For example, in our lignite power plant in Maritsa, we have every 4 years a total outage to overhaul common systems, and this was in 2017. If you look to the renewable fleet, we are also have high availability, and this availability is around 97.6, which is a little bit less below the top decile of our peers. But we still had some, let's say, ramp-up issues in our Brazilian wind farms. But except that, the other was really excellent. On the next slide, on 14, we give a little overview about all the assets, the single assets. If you look to the thermal fleet, you see that there is really, let's say, a variation. Maritsa, 84.8%, as already mentioned, due to the common overhaul of systems. And Then we have usual high availability in our CCGT, on our combined cycle gas turbine power plants like Arubal and Termoemkali. On the thermal plants, we also show a red bar in the piles. This is the minimum availability we have to achieve in the year to get the full capacity payment. Otherwise, there may be small penalties if we underperform here. But as you can see where the red bars are, we are much better availability than the minimum. The renewable fleet, as mentioned, we are just below the top decile. We are in the top quartile, and we have constant high availabilities in our Austrian wind farms, Peru wind farms, and solar. So it was a little bit less, as mentioned, in Brazil wind, and we had in Vorotan, our hydropower plant in Armenia, which we acquired in 2015. We had a major maintenance, which was many years ago planned, even before we acquired it, and which was done in 2017. Then we also had some new acquisitions in 2017. We show it on page 15. We have acquired a portfolio in Brazil, which was 130 megawatt of hydro and 76 megawatt of cogeneration. And it's an unusual portfolio to acquire hydros, run-of-river hydros, and cogeneration. We had seven run-of-river hydros in this portfolio and four cogeneration plants. We signed this acquisition in November 2016 and closed it in March 2017. So between signing and closing, we start our integration program, and we had a big integration team of our people in the power plant across the globe, which were a part of the integration team, and it was covering health and safety, operation maintenance, compliance, IT, HR, corporate services, legal, and commercial. And for example, 2 days before we closed, we sent three teams to all the power plants. We clustered these 11 power plants into 7 clusters and 3 teams. Each team was led by a senior vice president, visited all the power plants, gave half a day induction, handed over our Kontur Global handbook, employee information, new clothes, so that people really felt that they are part of the CG family from day one. And we also started improvements, especially at the hydro plants. And this was driven by some technical modifications, some installation in the water dams. And we also integrated the control room of the hydros, which was normally implemented in the control room of the previous owner, into our control room, which is a central control room in one of the wind farms in Brazil, in Asa Branca. And after a short period, we could start to operate all the 7 hydros from the control room in our wind farm in Asa Branca. And regarding the portfolio availability, we could also see that we could improve the availability in 2017 compared to the availability of the previous years based on the things which we have done in the operations area. The other part Joe has already mentioned is the roll-up of our solar platform, especially in Italy. So in Italy, we are for almost 8 years operating solar platforms in Italy. We have rooftop solar and ground-mounted solar. And couple of years ago, we started to insource operations, and this insourcing of operations gives us a lot of opportunities and synergies if when we're doing the roll-up strategy of solar fields in Italy, so we can immediately integrate the new solar fields into our existing operations portfolio without, using a lot of efficiency. Our strategy is also to integrate these new solar fields between 120 days, and this is changing the operation scheme from outsourced operation into insourced operation, integrating to SAP all these items, and we have a standard and blueprint organization to integrate it within 120 days. Also, we see we can improve the availability of these new portfolios. We saw for the last acquisitions the availability of the plants was around 97.8, and we could increase it to 98.7, which is when we look at benchmark of a solar field is 90.8, so we are ahead of the benchmark here. And due to this insourcing strategy we started a couple of years ago, we are also able to reduce the fixed cost of the new acquired assets, and this we will continue, and because the market is fragmented in Italy, and we are especially looking to a mid-sized solar field where we can add a lot of profitability. Saying this, I would like to hand over to Jean-Christophe for the financials.
Thank you, Carl. So moving to slide 18, as Joe mentioned in the beginning of the presentation, 2017 was a very strong year for our financial results. As you can see here on slide 18, on our three main KPIs, revenue, adjusted EBITDA, and funds from operations, each of them have shown strong growth in 2017 versus 2016. Revenues up 13%, adjusted EBITDA 17% between 16 and 17, and FFO up 23%. I would say that this growth is a combination of acquisitions that we've made during the year 2017, and also commercial operation of projects that went live in our portfolio sometime in 2016 and delivered full result in 2017. And we also had in our thermal fleet a very strong, organic growth coming from the existing assets. Moving to the next slide on page 19, I'll show you that slide shows basically for the two divisions the change in the growth of our adjusted EBITDA. As I said, you see here that for the thermal group, we had a very strong growth with an 18% growth of the division adjusted EBITDA for the year compared to 16. Part of that was coming for the organic, existing asset growth of EBITDA on the existing asset, mainly on Marisa, where we got revenue for expenditures on CapEx DINOC that we installed in the previous years. We also had a provision release in Energie Anti on the litigation, and we had also very strong performance on other assets like Togo with lower fixed cost on Kilowatt, where the plant has been performing above 2016, plus 6%. So I would say really on the thermal fleet, a very strong growth of the adjusted EBITDA coming from the core asset of the portfolios. To add to that, as I mentioned, is our plant in Senegal. As you know, we had two phases of the plant. The first one went into commercial operation in May of 2016. The second one came to operation in October of 2016. The full impact of 2017 is 40 million additional EBITDA for the year coming from our Senegal assets. And finally, the acquisition we've made in Brazil in March of 2017, where we acquired cogeneration assets in Brazil as well as hydro assets. So on the thermal side, the Solution Brazil cogeneration added 12 million of adjusted EBITDA. So again, a very strong performance on thermal, which is a balanced, I would say, combination of half organic and half additions to through CODs and acquisition. On the renewable side, the picture is slightly different. So we have the positive impact of the Chapada wind farms that went into operation in the beginning of 2016, in the first quarter. So we have 3 months additional EBITDA for the year 2017. And also, like for Turnbull, the portfolio of hydro assets that we acquired in March of 2017 that generated additional EBITDA 9 months, 19 million for 2017. However, on the organic side, as you've seen on the previous slide, described by Carl, we experienced some availability issues in our wind farms in Brazil that impacted our EBITDA by about 10 million. And we also had some wind resources, low wind resources, I would say, for the year when you compare to the previous years and to the average of the past years. We've experienced low wind both in our Peruvian asset, Inca, as well as on our wind farm. And as you know, based on our the structure of our portfolio, the only little place where we have exposure is really on the resources side on renewables, solar, wind, and hydro. So here we have experienced a year where basically the wind resources have been lower than expectation, and that impacted the EBITDA. However, on the you take wind on the European side in Austria, it has been very strong and very good, and it boosted EBITDA by 2 million more than we had the previous year. And also on the hydro side, the hydrology, like the wind resources in Brazil, the hydrology in Brazil has been also weaker than expectation. Solar has been extremely strong, very strong solar year. We generated close to 3 million additional EBITDA coming from our solar portfolio, so we feel very confident about growing that line of assets, as Joe described in our roll-up strategy in Italy, and that has been delivering extremely good results with a lot of predictability and consistency across the year. So to summarize the year, very strong thermal. At the same time, on the growth, external growth and organic growth, a renewable impacted slightly by wind resources and hydro resources, and also the availability issue I mentioned, and compensated also by the acquisition and the COD of the project. Moving to the next slide on page 20, that shows basically the bridge between our adjusted EBITDA to our funds from operation, which is our measure of cash basically, and the cash generated from our business, I would say at constant leverage. So we have a 50% cash conversion rate, which is a slight improvement from 2016, where the cash conversion rate was at 47%. The main difference from that is coming from the interest paid that has been slightly lower in terms of growth versus the adjusted EBITDA compared to 16. The reason is that we had some one-off in interest charges in 2016 that we don't have in 2017. Therefore, you have in proportion lesser interest paid, and that basically boosted the conversion rate of the funds from operation to 50%. On the next slide, looking at our liquidity, so as you can see here, we have a very healthy, I would say, liquidity at the end of December. At 841 million, we have 556 million cash at the holding company, plus a revolving credit facility of 60 million. So that gives us basically a very strong cash flow. Even if you pro forma from the CSP, Spanish CSP acquisition, you see that our cash liquidity, total liquidity, is at 615 million. And if you just look at the holding company cash available, the holding company, we are at 330 million of cash, which is a pretty good liquidity that will definitely help us continue to grow and deploy our strategy. On the debt side, now net debt is 2.1 billion, which is again aligned with our commitments. that we took during the roadshow that give us a 4.1 times net debt to EBITDA. And if you pro forma that with a CSP acquisition, you have 3.2 billion, which is slightly above the 4.5 ratio. But we are, as we said during the roadshow, we could be at one point of time after closing of an acquisition slightly above the range, but we are confident that we will be back into the range at the end of the year, and this is what we are confirming here with annualized EBITDA from the Spanish acquisition plus the normal depreciation of the assets. We will be back in the leverage range between 4 to 4.5 times at the end of 2018. And this is just basically confirming what I just said. So basically a continuous decrease of our leverage ratio from 2014 to 2017, and again confirming that with our CSP acquisition in Spain, we will be within the range as committed during the IPO. That being said, I'll turn to Joe now for the closing remarks of the presentation.
Okay, thanks, Jean-Christophe. Thanks, everyone, for joining today. And we're going to shortly turn it over to questions. Overall, a strong 2017, as expected, as forecast to the market when we went into the IPO. Don't give us too much credit, because obviously it's not so hard to predict a year when you take a company public in November. But what we've seen kind of late in December on the growth side, as well as meaningful movement on the growth side in the first quarter of this year, tells us that the visibility we were providing to the market about the future, the longer-term future, is being realized and is obviously giving us significant confidence over our expectation related to the overall growth of the company over the next 5 years. So it was a good year. First, operationally, that obviously drives all of the financial results. It led to financial results that were strong and as expected. And I like where we stand currently with our growth pipeline, both greenfield and acquisition, and those hybrids that we have, like the Voratan asset in Armenia or repowering in Austria, which are kind of a mix of both, where we've acquired assets, but then are investing new capital into those businesses at attractive rates of return to continue to grow, let's call it semi-organically, in the portfolio. I'd reiterate that we are active on the acquisition market. We continue to develop that pipeline in our core markets, looking at the types of assets in our core strategies that we have to date pursued as part of building the business. We also like the way we see 2018 unfolding. We're providing the market with expectations around dividend for 2018 that will be communicated formally towards the end of the year, but expect that dividend to be at the higher end of the range of what we provided to the market during the IPO process. With that, I'll turn it over to Q&A, both in the room and then on the recorded line.
Yeah, good morning. It's John Musk from RBC. Can I ask two questions? Firstly, just to get a sense of your comments around being ahead of the target to double EBITDA over 5 years. Is that more on the timing of when you expect to achieve that? So is it a year early or more than that? Or is it a case of being significantly above the two times over the 5 years? And then secondly, shorter term, you haven't given any guidance on 2018. I know that might be complicated by the Acciona acquisition, but are you able to give guidance on the existing portfolio and where you'd expect to be before we start thinking about the Acciona asset? On EBITDA, that is.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So, John, on the question around doubling, I think we'll kind of get there with both sides of the coin. So I think that the way we look at the growth target of the company in the context of what we've seen on the growth side in the last few months gives us confidence that will happen meaningfully sooner. And then if you think about the five-year period, it will lead to meaningfully more than doubling if the doubling happens sooner. And so we feel that without going into kind of picking dates in the future, that the acquisitions and the visibility we have on pipeline right now are clearly bringing that doubling forward into that five-year period. In terms of how to think about guidance, and in the context in particular of the Acciona transaction and when that closes, what we can say currently in 2018 is that we like what we see on the asset availability and just operations generally. It puts us where we would expect to deliver in line with expectations for 18. In terms of specific guidance, we're aware of the consensus. There's consensus out in the market for 2018 that includes the Acciona transaction with various assumptions on when that transaction closes. When we think about that consensus, I think that we're comfortable with where that currently exists for those who have started to think about how Acciona fits into, the Acciona closing fits into that, and when we close, which we'll have a lot more visibility on in the next few weeks, when that will occur in May, we'll kind of come back to you and talk to the market about how they should think about results for 2018 within that context.
Good morning, Vincent Aaron from JP Morgan. A quick question regarding Forex. Is it fair to assume that it would be a positive impact for you in 2018? And if so, how much? Thank you.
For 2018, what we see today, yes. I mean, I would say that you see about 50% of our EBITDA is Europe-based, and you see an appreciation of the euro. So I would tell you that, yes, it is. Now, I mean, predicting what would be the Forex through the end of the year, it's difficult to say today.
But assuming it's possible, for the rest of the
year. Yeah, I mean, I would say a slightly positive impact.
Good morning, Baptiste Cota from Goldman Sachs. Three questions, please. Can you talk about the progress on renegotiating PPAs? You've got 2019 coming up in for Sochi Gota and Termoarm Cali. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think Sochi Gota already recontracted some of its capacity. Second question, can you talk a bit about the one-offs you have, both at EBITDA, you mentioned provision releases, and below EBITDA? And last question, if you were to reach this doubling EBITDA target in 2022 or earlier, because of the potential you see, the pipeline, the M&A, do you think you may struggle to remain between the 4 and 4.5 times leverage, given all the working progress that you will have due to Kosovo CapEx? Thank you very much.
Let me take the question on Sochi Gota, and then I'll turn it over to JC for below the line, and then we can talk about leverage and doubling. In terms of recontracting, Sochi Gota is a good example of where we have seen assets that come to the end of the PPA life recontracting at attractive levels in their markets. And so, as you know, we'll have an expiration of the PPA that was in existence for 20 years. We have recontracted that asset about 154 megawatts until the end of 2019, and currently about 145 until the end of 2023. So that's approximately 95% of the overall capacity that's been recontracted out another 4 years. And so we expect to see kind of continuing levels of recontracting of that business. There's real demand in the market for baseload thermal plant in Colombia, given the dependence upon hydrology, and we're recontracting at levels that are at or better than the original PPA price inflated by the U.S. dollar inflation that attaches to that PPA. So we think that's a real life example of what recontracting opportunities look like. I'd also point out that process-wise, we saw that recontracting begin about a year and a half before the expiration of the PPA, is when we first approached the market and started to take expressions of interest for the business. And then as we got closer to the termination of the PPA, we saw the firming up of offers in the market. And so we really had visibility on process about 18 months before the end of the PPA, and then on terms and pricing within the quarter before the PPA. So I think it's a good test case for how to think about recontracting in these markets. JC, I'll turn it over to you for below the line.
Sure. So, yes, I mentioned that in the thermal result, we had the provision release that was already in the financial statements as of June 30, which is basically we had the litigation with MAN in the Caribbean, and we booked a provision. We won the arbitration. We got the cash last year, and we released a provision this year. So the provision was $7 million, and that basically reduced our fixed cost and therefore improved our EBITDA. In terms of provision below the line, we don't have any provision below the line. I mean, the only one-off that we have below the line is the IPO cost for $12.5 million, which are not in EBITDA but below.
And then on thinking about leverage targets, growth, acceleration of growth, et cetera, we've shown as we went through the marketing process around the IPO that we were comfortably with the growth within the 4 to 4.5 times net leverage. I think that as we communicated on our last call related to the Acciona acquisition, even in that project on which we're putting, very attractive project-level debt, by year end, we come down back into the range by the year end of the year of the acquisition. And so I don't see anything that would bring us outside of that range, irrespective of how rapidly we grow the business, because we're cognizant of where we expect it to be and where we communicated we would be in terms of net leverage. And if anything, I see, given the nature of the accretiveness, both in terms of pure EBITDA and credit accretiveness of the type of growth that we like to do and how we lever it, that you'll actually see us closer to the bottom end of that range during the forecast period. So we keep the net leverage target in mind as we pursue and finance the growth of the company, and bringing forward that growth is not going to move us beyond the targets that we provided to the market when we went into the IPO process.
Hi, Vincent from JP Morgan again. Just taking the opportunity to ask for an update on the Mexico prospect with ALPEC and the Brazilian one with NG, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure, Vincent. So let's talk about both transactions in that order. So the first thing to say about both of them is we were in an exclusivity formal that had been announced to the market by our counterparties. And those exclusivities have lapsed. The In the case of Alpek, we've been intensively working with them over the past several months in the new year to finalize the terms of a transaction. We're at that stage now in the process where we're working closely and delicately, and so you know we remain fully engaged on the Alpek process. In the case of Engie, we conducted meaningful diligence of the portfolio, which I think you and others who've followed this understand is a construction stage asset as well as an operational asset. You know, when one goes through diligence, one learns a lot more about assets and transactions than you know at first glance. And the lapsing of the exclusivity there has been intentional, and we don't foresee continuing to pursue that prospective acquisition following the conclusion of our diligence period. And so our current near-term focus is squarely on the Alpek opportunity. Operator, can we turn to any questions that might be on the recorded line, please?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1. There are no questions at this time, but again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Okay, if there are no other questions, we'd like to thank you for attending this preliminary results call for our 2017 year, our first, I would say, and thank you for being part of it, and thanks for the support. The follow-up, we would encourage you to reach out to the contact people that you'll see in the preliminary statement as well as the materials. So you have Alice Heathcote, Laurent Hulot, as well as, you know, Jean-Christophe, Pierre-Adrien, Carl, and myself. Please feel free to reach out with any follow-ups. And thanks for your time.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.